Hello and welcome to an InsideCollegeHockey.com postseason podcast recorded April 17th, 2008. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, podcast host and senior writer covering ECAC hockey. Joined today by Inch editor and columnist Mike Eidelbiss. Hello, Mike.
Good evening.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful.
That's fantastic. A little
sad that the season's over, of course, but we'll carry on.
Recovered from Denver?
No.
I have not.
Perfect answer.
We'll talk to somebody else who has certainly not recovered from Denver, that being Jeff Howe. How are you doing, Jeff?
Oh, fantastic. How are you, Gladdy?
I'm fantastic as well.
Good
feeling good?
I'm feeling terrible.
Okay.
That's great.
Well, as we know, and I'm sure that anybody listening to this podcast knows, Boston College is the 2008 national champion after defeating North Dakota in the Frozen Four semifinals and beating Notre Dame in the Frozen Four championship. Rook, let's talk about Boston College a little bit. They've had their ups and downs this season, but certainly it's impossible to be higher than they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're just looking at a team that had all the talent in the world. As Jerry York said throughout the course of the season, it wasn't the most talented BC team that he's ever had, but it was definitely up there. I mean, one of the two or three most talented teams in the country. They had their troubles throughout the course of the season, but I mean, they did a great job down the stretch once March came around of really putting it back together. I mean, I think the best thing that may have happened to them was the fact that they struggled and Nathan Gurley struggled in late February, then, you know, down the regular season stretch. And it caused him to, as he said, take a look in the mirror and see if he was playing the right way and you know, not cheating the game. And he came out and he was on fire from the start of the hockey tournament all the way through the NCAA tournament. And he completely stole the show in Denver and that was what he had been doing for about three weekends before that, too. So you definitely saw the best team in the country win this thing. They couldn't have been playing better at a better time. And another key factor was definitely John Muse, who's a question mark at times throughout the regular season. And he was definitely the best goalie in the tournament. He outshined guys like Lamoureux and other guys that, you know, he went up against Kangas, who was another solid player from Minnesota. You know, Muse was the guy left standing when it was all said and done.
You know, Bus, we'll talk about this more throughout the podcast tonight, but I think some teams will probably be disappointed. You know, those teams that lost in this tournament, not so much disappointed that they're out, because every team that loses is disappointed in that, but disappointed in how they played. And two of the teams certainly who would fall under that umbrella are North Dakota and Michigan, especially in the first 20 minutes of their semifinal games, which they eventually both lost.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, it really surprised me on both accounts. Well, you know, maybe not so much with North Dakota, but because we had kind of seen, you know, especially in that Midwest Regional Final against Wisconsin, how you know, they really came out flat and flat. I don't even think flat describes how they came out against Wisconsin, but they came out worse than flat against Boston College. And you know, it was really a surprise to me because you know, in the days leading up to the tournament, they had mentioned about how important it was for them to not come out and lay an egg and get out to a good start, and they did the exact opposite. And the same with Michigan. I mean, Michigan, you know, they really didn't, throughout the course of the season, did not play a lot of close games. And, you know, I don't know if they were expecting Notre Dame in the semifinal to come out and play tight. And Michigan would just kind of take control of the game and control the flow and really put Notre Dame back on their heels. But, you know, obviously Notre Dame kind of withstood an early onslaught from Michigan, at least over the first 5 minutes or so, and then settled in and, you know, jumped out to a lead and, got big enough to have Billy Sauer get yanked from the game in the first period or after the first period. And even though Michigan rallied only to lose in overtime, you know, I think we all expected a lot more out of those two teams, especially North Dakota, given that they had come out, gotten off to slow starts against Princeton and against Wisconsin, and even to a certain extent in the WCHA tournament when they lost to Denver.
Right on. The one thing I think the most impressive stretch of hockey to me in the entire tournament was the start of the second period of the championship game. I mean, the oohs and ahs came when Notre Dame went up 3-0 on Michigan on Thursday night, and BC went up 4-0 on North Dakota on Thursday's early evening game. But for Notre Dame to get through that first period on a stage they've never played on before, whereas Boston College had been playing in that game the last two seasons, with 0-0, not a ton of chances either way, it looked to me at that time, after that 20 minutes, that was a perfect position for Notre Dame to be in. But Boston College came out and established itself right in that second period. Of course, it was Nathan Gerby who did it and got them on board and took them on his back and put them right ahead. I think, to me, that was what I was most impressed by for the entire tournament.
I agree, because you could have compared that game a lot to the way the Michigan State game was going last year. Just a game that, you know, Notre Dame was, I wouldn't say controlling, but it had the pace that it needed to win the game. And if BC let that pace sustain for 60 minutes the way it did against Michigan State a year ago, then you could look at a team that, you know, is going to get more confidence. It's sort of like a snowball effect as the game goes on. And, you know, a weird goal here or there, something like that, the game completely goes into Notre Dame's favor. But BC came out and started flying up and down the ice. Nathan Gerby became the presence that he had been for the last month and a half, you know, through 99% of his career, really. And he was the guy who made the plays. You know, a great first goal there. And then the second goal, diving forward towards the net on the power play, making a play happen, not just, you know, making a nice highlight reel play. He forced and willed that puck to go in the net just through sheer effort alone. You know, he put the team up 2-0, and I think it was about a 3 or 4 minute span there. And from there on, it just seemed like BC knew that it was playing its type of game and really had control for, you know, other than maybe when Notre Dame almost scored to make it 3-2. As soon as BC went up 2-0, you almost never had a doubt that they were going to win it.
I don't want to move on to the almost 3-2 goal yet, but I think one thing that was important for BC in looking back at that game and the way they got their first goal is it wasn't a line rush or, you know, kind of a bang bang play. They really cycled the puck, maintained possession in their own end, and worked hard and managed to keep the puck in their own end for about or in Notre Dame's end, I should say, for about 30 seconds there before Gerby finally shook loose, got open, and, you know, and it was a one-time shot. You know, it wasn't, it was the result of a lot of hard work, and really Boston College, you know, like you said, taking control rather than just kind of taking an advantage of a bounce or taking advantage of a turnover or a line rush. They worked hard for about 30, 45 seconds and generated a chance and buried it. And I think that really, you know, it set the tone that they could, they can come in and, you know, I don't know that people, I think when you look at a team like Boston College that has so much talent, you don't get the sense that they're hard workers. But, I mean, that's a hard-working group of kids. I mean, they're able to control the puck down low the way they did, especially in getting that first goal.
On that play, the first goal in particular, I thought Brian Gibbons was spectacular on the wall.
Yeah.
And I liked his game. He certainly is in the shadows, whereas some of the other Boston College players are in the spotlight. But I like what he does for them, and I know that his teammates appreciate his work ethic.
Brian Gibbons is definitely a kid who came on almost the way a guy like Nick Petrecki did towards the end of the season. Right around beanpot time, I'm not sure if he is going to turn into the pure goal scorer that I think Ben Smith did late last season and into this season, but he's definitely a playmaker. I mean, that kid can pass the puck. When Gervie, I think it was when BC tied the Miami game, but it was either the second or third goal of that three-goal flurry against Miami. It was Gibbons who made that really nice cross-ice pass above the right point down to Gervie in the slot there. I mean, it's just plays like that that he has made on a game-by-game basis ever since the playoffs started for that team. So I would look for him to have a really big playmaking sort of year next year.
Yeah, he's got it. And he plays center ice position primarily, so you know that his coaching staff trusts him defensively. I like his game. Somebody definitely to keep an eye on if you're watching the Eagles. Now do you want to get to the 3-2 stuff, Bus?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Well, you know, some of the banter, at least right after the goal was waved off.
Yeah, you want to let me set the stage here.
Please.
Again, our audience is probably very familiar with what we're talking about, but about 15 minutes left in the third period of last Saturday's national championship game. At the time, Boston College was leading 3-1, and Notre Dame took control in the neutral zone, came over the line on a line rush, and it was actually two defensemen who were leading the way at this point. They had jumped up, and Ian Cole carried the puck on the left wing side, and a couple of Notre Dame forwards had gone to the net, and Cole passed it across to the far post through traffic, where the puck hit the skates of Kyle Lawson at the edge of the crease, and after hitting his skates, the puck went into the net, and it was signaled a goal right away. Then upon video review, the goal was waved off, saying that the puck was directed into the net with the skates in a kicking motion, was the ruling. So now you can pick up from there, Bus.
Well, I think we all obviously had, I can't remember actually if we all came to the same consensus. I thought it was, I thought it should have been a goal. You know, from the replays that I saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, did Lawson make a kicking motion? Well, his skate kind of kicked forward, yeah. But he didn't make contact with the puck, I didn't think, with the skate that kicked forward. I had a hard time with the call and with the explanation in that instance. And then, you know, obviously BC takes the puck and goes right back down and scores about 40 seconds later. And then pretty much game over right there. But, you know, I just really had a problem with the call. And again, the replays that I saw, and I was downstairs in the media room watching when this all happened, the replays I saw, never did I think that the foot that made the kicking motion come in contact with the puck.
That is true.
So how...
And I think... Well, Jeff, you were sitting next to me at the time, and as soon as it went in, I washed it out. I waved my hands.
Yep.
Because on live action, I said, you know what, that went off his skate, and they're not going to count it. Then when you watch the replays, I think the human nature, and of course that's the worst thing to get involved with in officiating, but I think the human nature of the event and the moment, maybe we wanted it to be a goal. Everybody wanted a 3-2 game with 15 minutes left.
Right.
You know, and you're trying to find ways to let it happen, you know, rather than finding ways to make the call. So I'm okay admitting that I think that sentiment played into a lot of people's minds. I also think that by the book, it was the right call. Skate was moving forward, whether it's kicking it or not, he was moving toward the net. And I think that part of it was correct. But the last thing I'll say on this, and I mentioned it in the coverage that we wrote up, Tim Filangieri of Boston College does not get enough credit for that goal not counting. Because as the puck hit, after the puck hit Lawson's skate was on its way in, he took a swing at it with his stick and missed. You know, like a million times you'll see players kick a puck from their skates up to their stick blade and either make a pass or take a shot or whatever it might be. And the reason he missed is because Filangieri came back, didn't give up on the play, and cleared Lawson out at the edge of the crease. And that, to me, was a fantastic defensive play. And I don't think he's got enough credit for that. Because if he's just coasting back there, Lawson taps that in with a stick, no problem. And none of this is a discussion.
That's a good observation.
Going back to the rule, and I get your, what you're saying about maybe where sentiment weighs in and wanting it to be a goal, so it's not, so you now got a one goal game, with, you know, late in the third, or in the third period, I should say, but it's, you know, and the way the rule is written, he made the kicking motion, but I didn't think he touched the puck with the foot that made the kicking motion. That's kind of where the disconnect happens for me. Then the question, at least in my mind, becomes, is just making the motion enough, regardless of whether it affects where the puck goes? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I guess that's
one thing the NCAA did this year is they defined it more clearly that skates moving toward the net are a kicking motion. And, you know, if you were gliding in toward the net and it hit your skate and went in, I think that would be called a kicking motion because they had to define it. I mean, and you can't define it by if the player's knee was bent at a 60-degree angle to the ice and, you know, he, you know, moved his foot and used his toe of his blade and all that, you know, that nonsense because it can get ridiculous.
Sure.
You know, so I think from that standpoint, the fact that Lawson started the play at the blue line and was moving toward the net, you know, that's kind of what they had to go with. He was obviously moving toward the net.
So maybe the problem with it is that it shouldn't be referred to as a kicking motion at all.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a misnomer by using that to define what they're judging.
Right. Right. Well, that was one of the parts of the game that certainly drew a lot of discussion. I'm okay with the call. I'm okay with it. It's unfortunate, but I think it was okay.
One of those calls that I think that we are all happy that we didn't have to make.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Very good point. And one of the other ones, to me, the challenge that I would have if I were Notre Dame and I wanted to make that goal called were you 100% certain that it was a kicking motion to overturn the call? I mean, that's using a little bit of NFL analogy. You know, it has to be indisputable evidence to change what happened on the ice. And what happened on the ice was goal. That's what was signaled.
Yes.
And if you didn't see him, you know, wind up and give it a Ronaldinho, you know, then you're probably, I don't know, that to me would have been the touchy part if I were on the Notre Dame side of that argument. Was the fact that we're not sure if you kicked it or not, then we can't say for sure no goal. But obviously the video review judge was certain that it was a violation of the playing rules and the goal was not awarded. So that was a good thing. Let's talk about another controversial topic that probably at this time last week was not at all controversial. But after 3 days of hockey, Nathan Gerby left with the NCAA trophy, and Kevin Porter left with the Hobey Baker Memorial Award. Speaking of what you said just a moment ago, Jeff, I'm kind of glad I didn't have to make that call after the weekend. You know, on or any of the Hobey voters, how they would have voted, because clearly for those days on a national stage, Nathan Gerby was the best player, and Kevin Porter to me on Thursday night was a little invisible.
Well, I mean, if you are looking for the best player on the best team statistically, then Kevin Porter is your Hobey Baker. I mean, I don't think it was really up for much of a debate before the Frozen Four. As the rules dictate, you know, the voting is done when it's done for a reason. If you are looking for one person to start your team in, you know, in college hockey this year, you know, I think you probably take Gerby over Porter 9 times out of 10. And if you're voting after the postseason, after the Frozen Four, then I think Gerby wins the vote in a landslide, much the way we assume Porter already won the vote in a landslide. You know, did the Hobey voters get it wrong? I can't say that they did, because, you know, at the time when the voting was supposed to be done, I think it was pretty much a consensus that Porter was the best player in the country, or the most deserving of that award. So, I mean, you could say it's controversial, and in one sense it is, but, you know, I don't think you could go wrong with Kevin Porter this year.
Yeah, that me, after thinking about it for a while, you know, you start to think about the entire season, and he really was great every single weekend. So he was deserving to me, and absolutely earned that recognition.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think that you know, one thing that Porter was rewarded for was his consistency. You know, night in, night out, he was producing. And I know Gerby had stretches where he was unstoppable, but he also had, you know, a couple stretches during the course of the year where he was very average and didn't score for long periods of time. You know, I think that, and I don't look at it as a slight against Gerby. You know, obviously we felt pretty good about him in, you know, the middle of the season and into January when we had him as our number one Hobey candidate, and then he kind of tapered off a little bit and you know, fell back into the pack and had some games where he struggled and didn't score, and you know, it allowed Porter to move back up into that spot. So, you know, looking at what the voters look at, which is, you know, from game one all the way to the time when they actually have to cast the ballots, I think that I think that Porter was the right choice, because, you know, during that time period, he was the best, most consistent, most productive player in the nation. And not just offensively, but defensively too. But obviously, Gerby got his reward. I mean, he was the most outstanding player at the Frozen Four, and deservedly so, and named to the All-Tournament team. And I know it's a big if, but if he decides to come back next year, obviously he will be the front runner for the Hobey next year, no question.
Yeah, no question whatsoever. I'm not going to try and put you guys on the spot here, so I'll talk a little bit about why I'm asking the question, and also give my answer and explain what I thought. And I'll ask you guys in a minute, which players maybe stood out to you at the Frozen Four that you maybe had a little less familiarity with or were particularly impressive to you? For me, it was Notre Dame's Ryan Fang. I thought he was fantastic all weekend. A guy that, being based here in the East, I didn't get to see play at all during the regular season, and it, every shift it seemed like he was making something happen, and just has a little flair, and his skill level's high, his competitiveness is very high, the way he works out on the ice every shift, and just I guess maybe just wanted to mention him, because I thought he was spectacular, and again, if he stays around, Notre Dame's got themselves a very I'd certainly put him among my early look Hobie candidates for next season. He's a sophomore, just completed his sophomore season, and is a Nashville Predators draft pick. Anybody for you guys?
You know, I'd have to throw Notre Dame's forwards in there just as a unit, because they had a lot more speed than I expected them to have. And, you know, I had seen them earlier in the year, as a matter of fact, about the second or third weekend of the regular season, and thought that they were, you know, certainly a talented and capable group, and they have a lot of guys that can score, but I did not expect them to be as quick as they were. I think Muse stood out for me. Just having seen him on TV and not seeing him in person, and then finally getting to see him in action live, I think he's he's a pretty darn good goalie. I mean, he's under control. I thought he was pretty good positionally, and you think about a kid being a freshman and carrying the mail for a team that expects to be, if not win the national championship at the beginning of the season, at least be in the hunt for one. That's a lot of pressure to put on a freshman, let alone a freshman goaltender. And he, throughout the course of the season, handled it, about as well as you can expect. And, he outplayed a lot of veterans so over the stretch of the Hockey East tournament, and also into the NCAA tournament, and I thought that he was really good. I was really impressed with him, and just how solid he was, and just really calm, and just a very productive goaltender.
Yeah, Brooke? I mean, I have to echo you guys on everything that you've said so far. It's tough because we didn't see good performance out of Michigan or North Dakota pretty much as a whole. So it seems tough to go with any of their guys. Although Kolarik would probably score very well in an Olympic diving competition. but
come on.
that aside.
He was a lot worse with that thought in the regional. And Bus, one observation again, try not to talk too much about, conversations that we've had, but my impression of Michigan, and I guess we'll get into the semifinals here, kind of work our way backward. My impression of Michigan after having seen them in Albany at the East Regional, and especially with Porter, was he's kind of a guy that the game comes to him,
mm-hmm.
rather than he imposes his will on it. And when they got down 3-0, when Michigan got down 3-0 to Notre Dame, I remember turning to you and saying, it's not Porter who's going to get them back into this game. It's got to be, Kolarik or maybe Pulushai or some of those other players. And it turned out that it was Kolarik leading the way in that comeback. So credit to him for stepping up and getting those two goals that night in that semifinal game as Michigan battled back.
Yeah, you took the second half of my statement away from me almost with that. I poked the fun there. That was a I'll just skip it. But Kolarik, he was a force. As soon as they went down 3-0, he was everywhere. He was in the middle of every single play. Obviously, he scored the two goals. And he was a very good player. I mean, he was definitely the most dominant player on Michigan's side of the ice, and definitely in the game as soon as the game went to 3-0. But, there were also some guys, and I think I talked about it 2 weeks ago, but, just extending to the regionals of the tournament. Ryan Jones, seeing him this year, was phenomenal. Justin Mercier is a very, very good player. And Andrew Volkanen was, a star for Air Force in between the pipes. So those were three guys who stuck out over the course of the tournament, even though, they didn't last as long.
One thing we have to kind of mention about Fang, too, is that goalie scored the shorty that he scored in the end of the first period there.
Oh, yeah.
Of the semifinal against Michigan. That move was just ridiculous. I mean,
To me, that was the I can't. Hold on, let me just kind of jog the memory here a little bit. Yeah, that was the best goal I saw all season.
I would agree.
Absolutely the best goal I saw.
Not just the move, but then the shot to boot.
The finish, you know. Backhand, top cheese, near post. Are you serious? Wow, what a goal.
I felt like it was a Jack Buck moment. I do not believe what I just saw. I mean, it was amazing.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
Exactly.
And for him to do that in that position, I mean, obviously you could tell that he's been, you know, and just kind of in what we heard from some of the chatter we heard from Notre Dame, you know, after the game and then the next day, you know, it's something he's been working on and, you know, something he's been toying with. But to actually, you know, not just pull it out of the bag of tricks in the game, but in that game, I mean.
Yeah. With a minute left, 30 seconds left in the first period of a game that most people expect you to get run out of the rink. And they're like, holy cow, maybe this Notre Dame team is for real. And then he drops that on everybody. Enjoy your popcorn and talk about it.
Yeah,
talk amongst yourselves.
Exactly. That's what,
so coffee talk.
That's what Michigan defensemen did after that one. They
yeah,
talked
exactly.
amongst themselves.
No, they talked to themselves.
Do you see the rest of my equipment? Because various pieces have been left all over this ice.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Just, I think building on that game a little bit more and other stuff that we were saying, other than BC's, you know, will to dominate most of the tournament, the second most impressive thing that, you know, to me in the Frozen Four was after Notre Dame blew the lead and then took the lead to make it 4-3 and then lost that lead again and then won the game. That stretch for Notre Dame showed a true test of character. I mean, that was a team that, like you guys just said, had probably, you know, a lot of people said they had no business even being in that arena. And every single time you see something like that happen, the underdog, you know, gives it up at the end of the game, you always see that team end up losing in some way or another, whether it's regulation or it's an overtime. And Notre Dame found a way to hang tough, you know, stick together and then score the game winning goal. I thought that was about as impressive as anything over the course of the week.
Yeah, you know what, to me, was a good stretch of that game was the last maybe 11 minutes of that second period. They're up 3-0, and then Michigan scored twice to make it 3-2, and the span was, I think, about 15 seconds. Notre Dame got through the rest of that second period, and that was, to me, pretty important for them. Of course, Michigan eventually tied it twice in the third period, but I think maybe that was a stretch where the game could have gotten away from them a little bit, and it didn't. So I liked that part of it, and it did bode well for what eventually happened later on in that game.
I think a lot of that is also a direct a result of Jeff Jackson's influence on that team, that even though they hadn't been there before, hadn't played on that big stage, he had obviously been in that situation. And, you know, you just knew in talking to some of those guys, you know, in the days leading up to the Frozen Four, that they really were looking to him for guidance and trusted, you know, the things that he was saying about, okay, here's the Frozen Four, here's what's going to happen, I've been here before, you can expect this, this, and this. And they were really, you know, they didn't have that experience as a team, but they knew that their coach did, and they were looking for him, looking to him for that leadership. And, you know, obviously they bought in. There's no question about it.
One thing, I guess I'll give a last call here on the Frozen Four, hockey-wise. Anybody?
I can't.
I'll take that.
Whoa.
I'll take that as a no.
The knee cage is closed.
All right. How about...
North Dakota didn't show up. There's the last call on that.
Oh, man.
Thanks.
How come Lamoureux didn't win the Hobie? He got hosed. Lamoureux got screwed. He should win the Hobie.
Yeah.
Okay.
He wasn't one of the two West All-Americans.
Yeah, that's, again, he wasn't the first team goalie in his league.
Yeah.
New Hampshire did it three times. Providence twice, Northeastern twice. They beat Boston College. So seven of BC's 11 losses were to those three teams during the regular season. The other teams that beat the eventual national champions were the University of Massachusetts, University of Michigan, University of Massachusetts Lowell, and Clarkson University.
There you go.
So, just a little tidbit I always like to, I don't know, kind of corny, but, you know, those are teams that they can always say, you know, we beat the national champs. So there you go. Impressions of Denver as a host city and the Pepsi Center as a host facility.
I'm going to wait till the end.
Okay.
Because I'm Brooke? Biased.
Yeah, I think you guys know firsthand, and I would say 90% of the people who listen to this podcast know firsthand that I had a phenomenal time up in Denver.
Yeah, we don't get cheated.
No, we bury our chances.
We don't cheat the game when we're at Frozen Four.
No.
Nope. Not one bit. And I like the rink. I like the Pepsi Center a lot. I thought they put on a good show. It was very well run. I don't have any complaints about anything at all.
Yeah, I'm on board with that also. I chuckled a bit coming from a heavily snowed area during the winter time, and snow fell on Thursday. People were remarking on it, and I can't believe it's snowing. It's April and all this stuff. And, you know, it is a hockey tournament. It's not a baseball tournament.
Exactly.
It's not a golf tournament. So it's an indoor sport. It doesn't matter what the weather is.
It's not a baseball tournament, Gladdy says.
But if it snowed in Tampa in 2012, then I'd probably have a problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be an issue. That would be a sign of a larger problem.
Yeah, I think it would. I think it would. The nice baseball park. Baseball rink?
Yes.
Lousy baseball teams, but...
Yes. I think I'm biased. I lived there for 4 years, so... and I always say that, or I've always considered Denver to be my adopted hometown. So, you know, I'm very comfortable there, but I do like what it has to offer. It's a really vibrant city. You know, there's a lot of hockey tradition there too, believe it or not. You know, it goes a lot further than just the Avalanche. You know, you've got a core group of people that have followed college hockey. You know, both Denver and Colorado College. You know, since the 1950s and 60s. You've got some Air Force fans there, and you know, it's a little bit of a smaller fan base, but still a very solid fan base. And then you've got the NHL people in the area that go back to the old Colorado Rockies when they had Don Cherry behind the bench and Barry Beck was playing for them and Lanny McDonald and guys of that nature. So, you know, it is – I think it's an underrated sports town. I think that it's an underrated hockey town. I think that maybe the Avalanche gives them a little bit of a bad name because a lot of those people are late to the game, and you know, they buy the tickets by the glass so they can sit there and talk and call their friends on their cell phones and say, "Hey, look at me, I'm sitting by the glass," without kind of really knowing what's going on. but it's, you know, it's a good sports town, and I thought all in all it was well received, and I think. You know, I'd like to see it get back there, no question. And I like the rink. I think it's a nice rink.
I like it, too. It's again, very similar to many of those other newer structures, such as Philadelphia, Boston, Buffalo, Chicago.
But Sorry to interrupt, but I thought it seemed a lot cozier than maybe Boston or Buffalo. I mean, it's a big place, no question about it. But I thought it seemed a little bit... I think Boston's a huge building. I mean, it seems like you're a million miles away from everything.
When you're in the media floor, you are.
When you're up there.
Yeah.
For some reason that building seemed a little cozier than St. Louis or Boston or I didn't mind Buffalo.
Buffalo's rink. I was in there for a little while earlier this season, and I like that building. I really do. It's one of the good ones. I like it much better than Boston. I like it better than Philly's building, which I've been to a couple times. I don't know, but we'll be in a similar venue next season in D.C., and one of the things that links Denver and Washington, D.C., similar to what you were just saying, Bus, was that I think for the Frozen Four draws a wide variety of people with a wide variety of interests. And I think what was good about Denver is that everybody found something to do.
Exactly.
And certainly in D.C., everybody will be able to find something that they like to do.
That's true.
So
that's true.
I think that has a similarity to it.
And
that probably is not the case in Buffalo or St. Paul, or Columbus. I mean, nothing against those cities, and what it comes down to for me is you're there for the hockey.
Right.
So...
But for everybody else,
don't complain about the statues in the parks.
But except for that one Gumby statue that they had in that one by the Performing Arts Center in Denver, that was kind of weird. But
the statue of the Blue Bears behind.
Well, he just wanted to get in that building, I think.
Yeah.
He was trying to see what was going on.
Yeah. Back of the bear.
But
meet me at the back of the bear.
You know, one thing that. Even when you'd go out in town, people would ask, are you here for the hockey, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot going on in Denver and there's a lot to do and there's a lot of diverse scenes in the city, the hockey didn't get lost. I'm not so sure that that's going to be the same in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I think that, that was encouraging, is that it was still in the, in the public consciousness. Whether that happens in D.C. or not, I guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me. I mean, I've been to 8 Frozen Fours now, and I had always tended to prefer the, medium-sized cities, the Columbus and Buffalo and Milwaukee's, because when you go to an event that's important to all of us who love this game like we do, you want it to feel important. It'd be like going to your best friend's wedding that was taking place during a rock concert. I'm here for the wedding, and then there's a rock concert going on and everyone else is paying attention to other things. That's not special. That's not important. So I think Denver kind of had a good balance of that, and I was concerned all along about that, about D.C. And when we were evaluating those sites several years ago, we were kind of down in the district, and somebody who lives there actually said, I think it's a great city, and it's a great place to visit with your family, but I don't think it's a great place for the Frozen Four.
Right.
And I guess that's kind of stuck in the back of my head. Fortunately, I think the hockey buzz in that city is greater now than it has been in a very, very long time. And I think at this time next year we can expect the same.
I think you're right. I mean, I think obviously hockey's on the upswing there. And I think maybe one thing that might work in its favor is that, in a lot of ways, D.C. is like Denver in that nobody's really from there.
It's a transient city.
It is definitely a transient city. So, you know, I think you're going to get a fair amount of people who, you know, who, you know, should Wisconsin be there? You're going to get some people in D.C. who are from Wisconsin or went to Wisconsin coming out of the woodwork. And, you know, same if a Boston College or a Michigan is there. Yeah, you're going to get those people, and it'll, you know, it'll help liven it up a little. But that said, it's a pro town, first of all. Actually, it's a Redskins town.
It's a Redskins town.
But hockey is obviously taking a little bit more of a grasp.
Yeah, and the nature of the city and the employment there, especially in the government sector, is that people come from every state to be represented or to represent where they came from. You know, and I think that, you know, having spent some time there, when you go out, you're gonna just run into, you know, it doesn't matter what time of the year, what you're talking about, you're gonna run into some people who say, oh, geez, you know, I went to BU and I had season tickets there, or, oh yeah, I mean, they had college hockey at Northern Michigan where I went to school, and, you know, and those kinds of townies, I think, can make a difference, and I hope they do have that impact.
Yes.
But we'll see that. So time for predictions. Who's going to be playing there next year?
Capitals.
Would you say, Rook?
I know we are. That's
we
are. Inside College Hockey will be playing.
That's 9th and the 11th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. 2009.
You're right.
I ordered my tickets already, actually.
Fantastic.
Let me see. Yes, April 9th and 11th, hosted by the U.S. Naval Academy.
Yes.
You know, they're a wonderful program that they've got down there in Annapolis or over there, wherever. I don't know. I'm not sure where Annapolis is in relation to Washington, D.C. But getting to who will be playing there next year, I guess that's kind of one thing we'll attack. I think we'll take it on next week.
Yeah, next week we'll launch the 10-for-09. We always have the earliest season preview, the 10-for-09 or 08 or 07 that we've run for, I think, every year that we've been at Inch. Looking forward, we'll look at some Hobie candidates, right, Bus?
We will.
Top 10 teams. And what else?
I think we'll...
Storylines.
10
storylines for 08-09, so... Well, we'll have that stuff next week. As you know, we do not stop in the off-season. We may slow down a little bit, but we'll have podcasts. We'll have NHL draft coverage from Ottawa. We will have the 10-for-09 segment. We'll have States of the Game this summer. Assorted features and postcards, as we like to call them.
And A to Z, of course.
And, of course, Inch A to Z, which will lead us into our preseason coverage and the start of the 08-09 season.
You know, of
I
course.
Think? Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You think?
Well, I was just going to send out a warning that I think that wraps up the hockey portion of this podcast.
No, I was just going to say that you know, you mentioned the draft, and you know, I think all of us kind of go through the for lack of a better term, the hangover portion of the season being over. Because we work our tails off for however long it is, and then we get to this time of the year and we got nothing but free time, and you know, we start getting depressed or whatever. But you know, the draft's only 2 months away, I believe.
Yep.
In Ottawa, it won't be that long. And then about another month after that, we'll probably start up A to Z. So.
Oh yeah.
Maybe I'm not so sad anymore.
No, it's good. It's a good season.
There is no off season anymore. No such thing.
No. Hey, you don't want a long off season.
No. We should have,
you
want to
be playing that last game of the year.
We can't have spring hockey. That's spring football.
Well, there is spring hockey. It's called the Frozen Four.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
The NCAA tournament.
I'm just saying, let's play.
Oh, have a non-trad season?
No, let's just have a few games in June or something.
That's what I was across is for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And baseball.
Which baseball? NCAA?
Whatever baseball you like.
Tink.
If it's your rec league softball, or if it's major leagues, or a short season A ball in a sleepy little town nearby, you know, whatever. I like baseball. I love the game. I love it. So, baseball and hockey are the two sports that I will watch players of any ability at all age levels compete in. I like the sport that much. And so, not that I don't like lacrosse, because I do, but baseball and hockey are it for me.
That's a good question.
So let's let the deterioration commence.
There's a lot of
all you deterioration listeners, welcome on board. Plus, is there a way we could tag the podcast or capture it or something?
I don't know.
We're going to work on that. For next year, we'll work on that. Chapters of the Inch Podcast.
We should put a tone down or something.
Yeah.
Blow a horn.
Yeah.
I don't have a horn on my among my drops.
We have a gong.
Chicken, chicken, yeah! That means...
There we go.
We
have a 21 gong salute.
Oh, jeez.
To signify...
No, that's
no, that's how it ends. Yeah.
No crash.
To signify the start of the deterioration. Laugh tracks always make me laugh.
Yeah. There's a this weekend is kind of spring football weekend, isn't it?
It is. It is. Let's get to speaking of laugh tracks, I know many of our listeners probably don't get CBC and have not been watching the Hockey Night in Canada coverage of the NHL playoffs, but there's a Bud Light campaign, and it's in Canada because I haven't seen any of these commercials on the NBC or Versus coverage or any of the regional sports networks, but there's a Bud Light Canada ad campaign where they make fun of sports journalism, sports television broadcast journalism, and shows such as SportsCenter and, you know, highlight shows on other networks, those kinds of things. And they say, is fake laughter a problem in sports journalism? And then these guys at the desk go, ah! And they're just laughing through it. You must be kidding, right? It's pretty funny. That's one, and there's another one about our sports highlight shows too commercialized, and they start doing product placement jokes and different things. So I don't know. It's a good little campaign. I've enjoyed it.
No, that has not been on the States, as far as I know. And I haven't watched enough CBC to. I did watch a little bit of the Bees tonight and the Habs.
Kessel, Phil Kessel, what?
Yes, Phil Kessel, healthy scratch.
Phil Kessel, what? Back in the lineup, scoring goals.
And how can this kid be a healthy scratch? That's what I want to know. I mean, he was like the second or third leading goal scorer for them this year, and that's not a team that scores a ton of goals.
Yeah. Well.
So Boston.
So they scratched an 11 goal scorer.
Is that how many he had?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was gonna say.
I don't know if it was a lot more than 20 though.
Well, yeah, I don't think it was, but I'm just saying, where's the Boston guy when we need him? Why are they scratching Kessel?
I don't know why they're scratching Kessel. Dealing with something else, but the Bruins, I mean, I can't give you why they're scratching Kessel, but the Bruins have been playing extremely impressive. I mean, that team, and you don't want to say the team could have won the series by now, but they've played well enough to win every single game except for the first one. This team could very easily be up 3-2 right now, you know, if not have taken the series. They lost a game in overtime. They won a game in overtime. They lost the 1-0 game in game 4 to go down 3-1. But, I mean, that was a tremendous 1-0 hockey game right there. They had their chances. And then tonight, you know, was nowhere near as one-sided game as the 5-1 score indicates. It was 1-0 when I was heading home from work, and 25 minutes later when I got home, it was 5-1. So, you know, this team coming back home for game six, the Garden was unreal this week, especially in game four where they lost 1-0. I mean, the Canadiens fans traveling down here add a little bit to that, but, you know, the Bruins fans have been looking for something to scream about for, you know, other than at the owners.
Since 1970.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're finally back into this thing. Saturday is going to be a fun night. You know, the Sox are playing in the day. You got the Bruins at night, and then, you know, the Celtics are coming on Sunday night. So this is going to be a big weekend down in Boston.
All right. While you guys were discussing that, I punched up the Bruins stats here. This is weirder than you think. And granted, we don't follow them super closely. Phil Kessel ranked third on their team in goals with 19. Marco Sturm had 27. Chuck Kobusu had 22. Phil Kessel had 19, ranked third. Paradise had 17. But healthy scratch for the first, was it three games of the playoffs or four?
Four.
First four games of the playoffs. Okay. Guess how many guys he played? He played all 82 regular season games. So where is this coming from?
I don't know.
Kessel, Metropolit, Mark Stewart, that's it. Those are the only three guys in the Bruins who had played all 82 games.
All college guys, by the way.
Where did Glenn Metropolit play?
I don't remember.
I don't know if he was.
I think he was. Why don't you look that up?
We'll try that.
I'm pretty sure.
How about Mark Stewart?
Colorado College.
That is correct.
Defenseman. Big defenseman from Rochester, Minnesota.
Rochester, Minnesota. April 20. He's got a birthday coming up. April 27th, 1984. Metropolitan.
Goalie played in Vermont.
Yeah, Tim
yes,
Thomas.
He did. Tip Thomas.
Andrew Alberts, BC.
Yeah.
There's a lot of college guys in that team.
Kobe, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah,
I want to say Metropolit was an ECAC guy. Like a St. Lawrence or a Rensselaer or something like that.
He's a veteran, that's for sure.
Yes, he is.
Got his wiki page up here. He's an undrafted player.
Well, somebody told us that we had a wiki page.
We do.
I have not seen it. I tried to look for it, and I couldn't find it.
It is empty.
Oh, it is?
Yes. We're squatting it.
Did we start it?
I got a guy.
Can we put Don Cheadle facts on that page?
Well, this is kind of useless. This wiki page is useless.
Yeah, that's why you got to go to HockeyDB.
I know.
How do we kill this dead time?
Well, let's start a fantasy pool on where Glenn Metropolitan.
I'm telling you, it's an ECAC type school.
Dad, what's a muppet?
Well, not quite a muff. Not quite a puppet, but man. So to answer your question, I don't know.
Okay, again, on the Hockey DP page, he says his career started with the Nashville Knights in the ECHL in 95-96.
What?
And he played roller hockey in the summertime. It
really?
Doesn't list any college or junior at all.
Huh. I'll be darned. I could have sworn that he played somewhere.
You have a Bruins media guide, Rook?
I do not.
Well, yeah, crazy, man. Crazy. So maybe they're not all three college guys. That's cool.
I could have sworn he was. What's his hometown?
Ontario somewhere.
Well, we're gonna find this.
Toronto is his hometown. He's a 74 birth date. His bio in the Bruins official site. is limited.
Anybody else going to go see Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Potentially.
It looks like a very good movie.
Well, you know what? Here it is. He didn't play Major Junior. He went to the Coast, which then it was officially the Coast, right out of the BC Junior Hockey League.
No kidding.
And he played at Richmond Hill in the Metro Toronto League. Talk about, hey, there's a guy you can cheer for. Self-made man.
Ain't that the truth? I could have sworn.
Golden ticket there.
I could have sworn that he went to college, but no, he came right out of Vernon.
Yeah, there you go.
Not many people make that jump.
Hey, yeah, good for him. Yeah. Good job, Glenn Metropolitan.
Kudos to you, Glenn Metro.
Yeah. So, any kids out there who aren't getting that look, maybe not getting that D1 look.
Just keep playing.
Keep playing. They'll find you if you're good enough. Hey, Keith O'Coin. He's an everyday player for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Dustin Penner.
Out of Division III, Dustin Penner, yeah.
He's a
bazillionaire.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of main guys, when is Miguel Tejada going to get a look up there?
Miguel Tejada is old, we learned today.
He's still only 33.
Well, that's older than 31.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We didn't say he was Jose Contreras old.
33 broken down on steroids is worse than 31 broken down on steroids.
Yeah, that's true. El Duque.
Oh, by the way, I didn't watch it because I was watching the Caps game tonight, but I was told, no, I read it somewhere, that the Stanley Cup was on 30 Rock tonight.
Oh, terrific.
You know, speaking of which, we might have to find a way to put some of those pictures on the website of the Stanley Cup that we found.
Well, yeah, we can talk about it, and, you know,
with
savvy internet users can certainly find
Hayden Panettiere. And, is that how you say your name?
Hayden, I always mispronounce it.
I think it's Panettiere.
That's a better pronunciation than I give it. But
and then the other one, what's her name? Your friend. The one you know.
My friend.
The one that called you.
Alicia Cuthbert?
Yeah.
She didn't call me yet.
Oh, I thought she called.
Does she have pictures with the cup also?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, well, terrific.
Well, she's a Canadian.
She is a Canadian.
She's from Vancouver.
Hayden Panettiere, the young
She's the cheerleader
actress.
From Heroes.
Yeah, she's in the Heroes. That's, I guess, where she made herself most well-known. And was she in one of those cheerleading movies, perhaps?
You know what she was? She was in Remember the Titans. She was the one coach's daughter. Remember the daughter in the Remember the Titans?
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah.
The little girl, that was her.
Well, that's kind of creepy.
Well, but I'm saying she grew up. She's 18 now, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, I'm just saying, that's where people would remember.
Anyway.
She's the cheerleader in Heroes, and you can't wound her. It just grows back.
What's that?
On Heroes. That's her superpower.
I've never seen... Yeah, I don't watch television.
I've only seen one episode. Pretty good.
Yeah, well, anyway.
You know who else is in Heroes, by the way, is, and I can't remember her name, in Varsity Blues with David Vandergulik?
Yes, David Vandergulik.
the girl that wears the whipped cream bikini is in Heroes also. She's a superhero.
Oh, right.
She's friendly.
Allie Larder.
There you go.
Well, anyway, let's get back to the main thing, which is Hayden Panettiere did a photo shoot with the Stanley Cup of her hugging the cup and kissing it and embracing it in all sorts of different manners. And If you're Google savvy, you can find the pictures relatively easily to make outstanding desktop backgrounds. Outstanding.
Yes.
At this time of the year.
I would recommend
it. So there you go.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say the Cup enjoyed Hayden Panettiere much more than the Cup enjoyed, say, Rob Niedermeyer. I'm just
George Perros also embraced the Stanley Cup.
Francois Beauchemin.
So yeah, anyway, if you haven't seen them, they're worth looking at and enjoying.
I had some more.
You know how they say a picture is worth a thousand words.
Mm-hmm.
You see a young woman like that, who's so dedicated to the Stanley Cup and so passionate about it. It is motivation for all of us hockey fans to be motivated about the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. There was another thing I saw that was of somewhat hockey-related import. Oh, I know what it was.
Oh, the Vegas thing?
No. Oh, there's that. Sort of forgot about that one.
I never will.
Rook didn't hear this one. Okay, so if you go to one of my favorite non-sports...
Hold on. Let's not blast out the URLs. Let's just... Can I just give a general explanation?
Sure. I don't care. Well, why can't you blast out the URL? It's a good website.
Oh, people know it. They've got a TV show, don't they? Like a...
Yeah. Yeah, they've
yeah,
got
okay.
It's kind of a...
It's a celebrity news gossip site tracker thing.
It's funny, too, by the way.
It's called TMZ.com,
yeah.
Which I don't know what it stands for.
I do, but it's very...
Not good?
No, it's fine, but it's just really convoluted.
I gotcha.
Anyway.
Okay, TMZ.com.
Good website.
Had a photo gallery. You take it from here, boss.
It was of a club opening in Vegas. I think the club was called Rio Beach. Apparently there's a nightclub out in Vegas. I've never been to Vegas, so I'm just assuming, presumptuous here, but I'm assuming that there is a club in Vegas called Rio, and so they went and opened this this club called Rio Beach, which is basically
an outdoor bar, pool
type thing, and they did it on a nice sunny day with a lot of attractive women there, and a handful of celebrities, if you consider Fez from...
Cypress Hill.
Yeah. Oh, that's Cypress, yeah. And Sean Merriman from the Chargers, and Fez from the 70s show, who I guess is a pretty big celebrity. Anyways, so, you know, they have these various photos of partygoers there, and it was in the middle of the day. Or at least you're in daylight hours out in Vegas. And there's one photo in the photo gallery, and there's like 48 photos in this thing. And there's one photo with a young woman, you know, wearing a bikini, having a drink, and there's a TV over her shoulder. And whose face is on the TV but Miami coach Enrico Blasi.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It is great. It is unbelievable. And he obviously doesn't know that, but, you know, he's on there. I'll have to send it to him now.
Oh, yeah. We'll
send it to his players.
We'll have to let everybody know.
Yeah, right? I think we will, as a matter of fact. But
maybe the party goer was a Miami student who has turned into the Frozen Four. She probably met the... requirements to be a student at Miami.
Yeah, the admission requirements there are very stringent.
Very different than many other institutions.
And her test numbers probably were in the ballpark for admittance.
In the wheelhouse, yeah. They're there.
So anyways, go to TMZ and look for the Rio Beach grand opening photos, and I think it's number 14. I think it's number...
I thought it was 16 when you sent it to me.
Oh, it could have been that, too. It's in
Well, it's in there. It's in the first page.
It's
of the
no
gallery.
Higher than 18. And
yeah.
You'll laugh. It's funny. Yeah. It is funny. I thought it was Jack Parker at first, but
I was just going to say that Segway's great is the next. We do love how communities respond and facilities respond and, you know, area colleges always help out with the Frozen Four. And this is a story that people will only, you know, because they're in the crowd or they're watching on TV. We're in a work area. Rico Blasi is sitting there. He's doing ESPN studio work, so he's at the little in-ring studio with Clay Matfick and Bob Norton. And Blasi's head is on the television. I hear these two guys sitting behind me, look at the television, you know, trying to be hockey fans, trying to be interested, trying to be knowledgeable. And all I heard the one guy say was, "Hey, is that Jack Parker?" Like, no, it's not Jack Parker. But credit to them for embracing the game.
Yes.
That's where I stand on that.
New fans have to start somewhere.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, the other thing.
Welcome.
The other thing I was going to say is, not TMZ, it was, I actually just saw this yesterday, or was it today? Regardless. Ryan Miller is writing a playoff diary / blog for Maxim.com.
Oh, boy.
And I've seen two entries so far, and they both start with, "Well, I really haven't watched much of the games."
That's
so
good.
Well, in one, he was mad because he didn't want to watch other teams play. And in the other one, he was in Chicago. They don't have any playoff hockey there either.
That's correct.
Or the Wolves, maybe. But
is Drew Miller up with the Ducks?
I don't know.
Or is he down?
I don't know.
I would imagine that would be a team that Ryan Miller would follow.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he was there for last year for the
finals.
For the finals.
Yeah. I still think they're coming out of the West. I really do.
Well, they lost against tonight.
They lost tonight?
Yes, they did.
They're down 3-1.
Hey, just because you're down 3-1 doesn't mean you can't win the series.
No, it doesn't. No, it
That's
doesn't.
That's right. Believe. Believe.
Quack attack.
Man, they shouldn't lose, though. That makes it harder to win.
It does. Well, they shouldn't lose to that team. I don't know. I'm not.
Dallas is so corny.
Yeah.
They're corny. I mean. Oh.